I exposed an affair because it was affecting my sleep. Oh, this is going to be a good one. So basically, the upstairs neighbor was having an affair, and the downstairs neighbor got so fed up that they tracked down the wife, told her, and let's just say they've been sleeping a lot better these days. So I'll start with understanding what I did wasn't exactly right, but I regret nothing. Okay, this should be interesting. My upstairs neighbor is having an affair and it's disrupting my sleep. So I found the wife online and messaged her, problem solved. Now this is a good one. This is a goodie. Now I'm kind of curious as to how she actually tracked down the wife. My upstairs neighbor has been having an affair with a married man for about 4 months now. I wouldn't care, but because it's an affair, he comes over at odd hours of the night and they have sex very loudly, as in I can hear a lot, and it wakes me up slash prevents me from sleeping. How do I know it's an affair? He's never spent the night and his car has baby car seats in there. Oh my God. This guy's a dirty guy. Okay, let's keep going. Some backstory. I've had issues with my upstairs neighbor prior to this. Okay, so things were mounting. She would throw parties on Monday nights, rude. She gets home at 2 a.m. from work, pacing through her condo and having loud phone conversations, also rude. She's 40 years old, throwing parties with 20-year-olds and having affairs and living like a teenager. I try to talk to her like a normal person about my concerns, but she doesn't care. And I've had to get the association involved to stop the parties. I hate her. Oh, God. So I decided to learn some more about this mystery man. Okay, so I can see where things are going. So this person followed the 3-step rule. Step 1, if you got a problem with someone, talk to them directly. If that doesn't work, step 2, you get a third party involved. And they did. They talked to the association. That still didn't make the problem go away. And step 3, well, sometimes you just gotta take matters into your own hands. Let's see how they did it. I looked up the license plate, found an address, searched the address and found a name, took the name and did some social media stalking and found the man and his wife's profiles. I think we can see where this is going. I made a throwaway account, messaged the wife about the affair. Oh my God, this is like some serious PI work. Let's see how things turned out. I haven't seen him now for a few weeks and I'm sleeping really nicely. Smiley face. I can understand why this person snapped. Because when your sleep is getting affected like that, night after night after night, and it begins to spill into your day life, and all of a sudden you can't like focus at work, that's not a fair situation to be in. That said, it's one of those revenge stories where in the moment it may have been very satisfying to just put an end to the whole situation, but now this person has involved themselves into something that they were never originally a part of. And I don't know, like, I'm kind of worried about the family that was affected. And that's not the person, the author's fault. I mean, that's on the man who was having an affair, but I just... it's just one of those situations, you know? I think the lesson here is that when people live selfishly long enough, they begin to lose control on who gets affected by their behavior. And at that moment, they don't have control of how the truth comes out. Okay, so that one was very messy. And this next one is quieter, but honestly, it hits in a much deeper way. Help me, a 37-year-old female, prepared to break my own heart with your stories of choosing yourself after ending a long relationship with a 53-year-old male. Ooh, this one is definitely a deep one. Okay, so this woman has been in a long-term relationship with a man, and she's still in love with him, but she knows the relationship is no longer good for her. So she's hoping that she can find stories of encouragement that will allow her to have the strength to be able to move on from this relationship. I'm curious to figure out why and what's going on, so let's get into it. I'm a 37-year-old female, and I've been in a relationship with my boyfriend, 53-year-old male, for almost exactly 5 years. He has a long, patchy history of relationships, which have been few for his age, and typically he ended after about a year. Okay, that is interesting. That's not entirely a red flag, because people can change as they get older, but it's definitely something that we need to, like, put a little pin on it. Like, we need to take a little note and just go, all right, making a mental note of that. Okay, got it. He has blatant, avoidant, dismissive, avoidant attachment issues. 3 years ago, I insisted he go into therapy if we were going to remain together. He did, and even though it's been a rocky road of his learning about himself for the first time, adapting, acting out, improving, etc., etc., he's been enormously grateful I pushed him to go. Okay, so far, so good. I mean, the guy is willing to do the work and go to therapy and do the self-healing. I mean, it appears to be okay, but I guess there's more to the story. 1 year ago, I insisted we do couples therapy if we were going to remain together. Now, I'm curious as to, like, what is going on here? Like, now they're doing couples therapy. I mean, he's been working on himself. Like, what exactly is happening? He's someone who, for whatever combination of reasons, I saw as my one, who I'd live my life with. I'm discovering that's not how this will be. Okay, something's definitely up. I'm curious. I'm curious here. Okay, so she's gonna dive in and give us a little bit of a backstory. I had a 12-year relationship through college and my 20s that I ended because we both wanted different things in our future. I started to rebuild a new life. Yeah, I mean, people talk about the formative years being way earlier on in your childhood and, you know, teenage years. But I think there's, like, a late stage formative years when you go from, like, college years straight into your 20s, into your early 30s. Those are the years that are so defining for your life, where you're literally building and molding and shaping who you are going to become for the rest of your life and who you might actually spend that with. And to have to walk away from a 12-year relationship during those years, that is going to change a person. And then on top of that, she had to start fresh again and rebuild a life. Let's see what happens next. At 29 to 30, I fell head over heels with someone who gave me a whole new belief that I could have the kind of life I want that was not traditional, but involved moving to a different country, making art, etc. That relationship changed my life and brought me to life. And then after being together for a year and a half, he relapses, spun out, and committed suicide. I really do feel for this woman, because that level of devastation is really, really hard to come back from. Let's keep going here. I was devastated and went into intensive grief therapy. Yep. And gradually rebuilt my life. Already, I have so much admiration for this woman, because it is almost, you can't even put words like to describe the level of grief and sometimes even the guilt that comes from being affected by something like that. And to have to rebuild your life again, like, she was literally living her dream life with the love of her life and they were happy together. But something like the disease of addiction, it doesn't care what color you are, social economic background. It is crippling. It is crippling. And I feel for that person. I feel for that man. And I feel for her too. Okay, let's keep going here. A few years later, I had another brief and meaningful relationship. We were ultimately poorly suited for each other. Eventually, I fell in love with my current partner and had all the safety and solidity of my first relationship and some of the inspiration and sense of possibility of my big romance. It's hard to walk away from something like that. Clearly, there's something going on here, and I'm curious to know why, and you're probably curious too. We were both very serious with each other, began doing visa paperwork applications to be able to have permanent status in one country, and The first cracks appeared when he stopped being able to have sex with me. That's a red flag. There's an issue there. If it's not like a health issue, then it's a relationship issue, and that needs to be talked about. A lot of me campaigning, negotiating, planning, reaching out for contact, getting let down, being hurt, mad, feeling foolish. That makes sense now with the couples counseling. Yep, that makes a lot of sense. Now we figured it out. Okay. I feel like we're just on the, like, we're on the top of the iceberg. We're seeing like a symptom of something that is much deeper. So I'm curious to figure out what's really, really going on here. Okay, we're going to continue. Then he'll reappear and follow through as I'm family. He's sincere, as if we're planning a life together, et cetera, for a while. So there's a cycle going on here. Couples therapy has helped a lot. And then, as you'd expect from this pattern, yep, he quietly stopped seeing his individual therapy and didn't inform our couples therapist that he backed out of it until I finally told her. Then he started getting too busy to schedule couples therapy. Okay, so there's something much, much more sinister happening here. And this is like the typical relationship cycle. When there's one person who's not as committed and interested in a relationship, and they start kind of going outside of the relationship. I'm not saying that's what's happening here, but it's beginning to look like that. And I think the first red flag was the fact that he stopped being interested in having sex with his girlfriend. Okay? Like, now they're going to couples therapy. There's some issues there. Clearly, it's not alluding to a health issue. It's more of like an interest, a relationship kind of issue. And now he doesn't want to go to couples therapy anymore. So now he's not even wanting to make an effort to make the relationship work. And there's a cyclical pattern where, I'm not going to say the guy is cheating, but it kind of seems like it, because the fact that for a while it was like he was avoiding her, not wanting to like be affectionate towards her, not wanting to be intimate with her. And then it was like something happens and all of a sudden the guy's like, you're the love of my life. Let's plan our future together. Let's go to couples therapy. Guilt. Guilt. Guilty as charged. There's something going on there, because if now he's really making an effort and then he stops and then does something, feels guilty, and now he's back in couples therapy, like she's talking about a pattern and it's been going on for so long that now he's even tired of it. He's even fatigued. And he doesn't even want to do the pattern anymore. He just wants to go out and just do whatever he wants. I'm not jumping to conclusions here, but it's beginning to look a lot like that. Okay? It's beginning to look a lot like that. But we're gonna keep reading. I'm tired of this game. And after 5 years of these patterns, I don't have any more reason to hope for consistency. If he's not seriously doing the work with any kind of initiative, I've edged up to the line of breaking up before, but haven't done it. Sometimes because I see renewed effort, sometimes because who knows? That's my role in this dance. She's been locked into this pattern. He's been in the pattern, and it's this game, and she feels like, okay, when things are good, it's so good. And we're doing the work. We feel like we're getting progress. We're going somewhere. Like, you feel like you can't lose hope on something that has hope. But the question is, are we just chasing our tails here? Like, is there a future? Like, what's going on? What we need to figure out is what's the root cause of why they're in couples therapy. Like, what's really going on and what's causing the pattern? So somehow, despite the fact that I love him and he feels like home, despite the fact that I've already lost several major relationships with people I hoped one day to build a life with, I'm gearing myself up to break my own heart and to be heartbroken in turn by my expectation that he'll adapt quickly to his life without me. What is your best advice for breaking the cord in this kind of situation? How do you break your own heart and hopes for the future? I think we figured it out here. It looks like the man that she's in a relationship with is cheating on her. And here's a telltale sign. There's like this cyclical pattern that happens when someone is cheating on you in a relationship, in a monogamous relationship, okay? So when two people come together and they make an agreement with each other that we are going to be faithful with one another, and one person decides to look elsewhere, that's when they kind of grow a little bit more detached from the person that they're actually in a relationship with. And that's when you start getting the red flags of no longer wanting to have sex with that person, the avoidment, detachment issues, all those type of things. And then there's a need to go into couples therapy. So here's how the cycle works. There's the initial detachment because they're getting their love and affection and their intimacy elsewhere. Okay. Then there's the guilt, right? They feel bad about it. So then it's like they, you know, they're willing to go into the couples therapy. They're willing to make an effort, right? They do the therapy. And then after a while, it's been a couple weeks, maybe a couple months, they start, you know, those desires start bubbling up again. And then they go off and they cheat and they feel bad about it and they try and make up for it. And that's why she's in this pattern. She's in this pattern in this game when they're both locked into it, where this person is, it's seemingly like it's looking like this, where this man is cheating on her. He's feeling kind of bad about it. He's doing the couples therapy because he's trying to make it up to her. He's promising her the world. He wants to build a life with her. He's telling her all the right things. And then the desire, because he's what you call an outdoor cat. Okay. This guy's used to roaming. All right. He goes from place to place to place to place, and he's used to like these short relationships, and he's never really been like a long-term kind of guy, right? He's a different sort, a different sort. And those types of guys and girls should not be in long-term monogamous relationships. You got to know, like, you got to know yourself. They say, know thyself. Okay. So if you can't commit to one singular person, don't tell people that you're going to commit to one singular person. Don't do it. That's a whole other discussion for another day. But what I'm trying to say is that there's a pattern involved here and they're both locked into it. And I'm going to say this again. It's looking like he's cheating. He's feeling bad about it. He's doing the therapy, trying to make it up to her, promising her the world. And then he goes back to cheating because that is his nature, because he's kind of a guy that wants to get out there. And then she starts feeling like, am I doing the right thing? He's not having sex with me. The therapy is not working. And then now they've been in this pattern for so long that it's even getting old for him. And he's looking like he's the guy who's cheating. I'm not saying he is, but it's looking a lot like it, that he's even tired of the whole pattern. And he's like, you know what? He doesn't even want to do the couples therapy anymore. So there is no future here. There isn't. If you can't build something with someone, it's like trying to build a foundation for a house and your partner, like you're putting the bricks down, like you're doing the effort, you're showing up, you're putting the work in, and your partner keeps removing them and then puts some of them back and then removes another brick and puts one back but removes two bricks. Like you can't build something with someone who doesn't want to build something with you. So this is what my verdict is. I believe this woman does have to find the courage in her heart to listen to her heart, because her heart is clearly telling her the truth. And I believe that she does need to walk away from this relationship. It's not healthy for her. It's causing her way too much distress. She deserves better. She clearly is seemingly to be like a very wonderful person who puts it all in, who is like, you know, there's people in life that are just like romantics. Like she commits. Like she wants a relationship where she can find her person, her special person, and she deserves that. Anyone who is like, hey, I'm a lifer. This is the way I am. Like I'm a lifer. Like anyone who's like, I'm a lifer. I'm here. I show up when I say I'm going to do something. I do it. I'm committing. Like they deserve that in return. So I believe that she does need to remove herself from this relationship. She does need to move on. And in doing so, her love is going to be more honest, and it's going to allow the person, it's almost like a form of love for the other person too, because it's actually saying, hey, like you don't have to live in this lie anymore. You don't have to do this. And it's not excusing at all his behavior, but it's saying, this isn't working for either one of us. It's time to move on. So I really do feel for her. I believe that she does deserve better. And I know it's really tough because she's had a lot of, I would say, trauma around relationships, where she's had, like, you know, relationships where she's felt the safe and security and had the rug literally pulled from underneath her. So it's really tough for someone like that to just feel like she can just leave. But trust me, and I know you guys are probably thinking the same thing, her future self is going to thank her. And it's all it is, it's going to leave room for self-healing. And if it's meant to be, for that right person, that Mr. Right, to come into her life. And for the last one, this one is a whole lot pettier, but honestly, I really can't be mad at the author, and I think you're gonna find out why. My half sister wanted to show up in a wedding dress to my engagement party, so I changed the party theme so she would fit right in. Honest to God, I already love this author. I really do. She's my kind of girl. She really is. Let's get right into it. My half-sister, Heather, and I never really got along. We both are 24. My father left my mother for her mother, and we were born the same month, 20 days apart. It has always been weird. Wow, Dad was busy around that time. My God. It doesn't help that Heather's mom hates me and my mom. By extension, Heather and I didn't have the best relationship. You know what? I feel really bad for everyone involved except for the dad. Seriously, he's the one who created this whole mess to begin with, and everyone's just living through this hatred and like, it should have been me. Like, that is such an unfair thing to do to someone, especially the women that you've committed to be in a relationship with and your children. I'm gonna try and stay calm. We're gonna get to the story. It sucks when people have to live through an entire existence and deal with bad, like, relationships that are filled with hate that they didn't even create. And it's like not even their fault except for the dad. We're gonna continue reading that. She's always tried to one-up me, even though we both have similar economic backgrounds. I can give examples of this, but for the sake of the word limit, won't write them down here. So, my fiance and I got engaged last month, congrats, and I had our engagement party this Saturday. We had planned it originally as casual, formal event, you know, nice dresses, but not I am going to the Met Gala ball nice, but more like we are going to a good restaurant nice. Anyway, my cousin hits me up saying she has to show me something. It was the picture of the dress Heather was gonna wear. This dress. Jesus Christ. It can only be described as opulent. It was a long and white strapless with sewn-in crystals and golden accents. I'm pretty sure it's a wedding dress, but I can't be 100%. Okay, so wearing a wedding dress to someone's engagement party or wedding is a no. Is a big no, unless the bride and groom are like, hey, this is like the theme, everyone's gonna be wearing wedding dresses, it's like funky, quirky, ironic, then I'm like, okay, if it's that's their choice, then that's cool. But to show up to an engagement party in a full-on wedding gown, there's definitely something going on there. As in, this woman's half-sister has some deep-seated hatred. To a level that she's willing to literally outshine her on one of her most important days. Like, that needs to be figured out and that needs to be addressed. Like, I think they need to have a conversation because it's not their fault that they're in this weird situation that their dad put them in. And obviously their moms have been probably fueling, like, each daughter with hatred because there's that animosity because of what dad did. Take it up with dad. Dad is the issue, not the half-sisters. The sisters, they need to figure out how they're going to get along because dad is the issue here, not the sisters. But right now, that half-sister showing up to that engagement party in a wedding gown, not cool. But we're gonna see what happened. We're going to see what happened. This made me really mad. So I decided, fuck that. I started texting people telling them that there has been a change of plans. Interesting. And that instead of casual formal, I decided to make a costume party. My mother's side is crazy for Halloween, so they were ultimately on board. I told my father via text and asked him to relay the message to Heather and her mother, knowing full well that he would forget or leave it to the last minute. She knows her dad all too well. Saturday comes along, guests start showing up, most of them in costumes. Some didn't have time to get one. We just provided them with fun hats and cheap wigs. Heather, my dad, and her mother come like 1 hour late. As soon as she notices that everyone was either wearing elaborate costumes or weird accessories and she didn't stand out, she lost it. Especially when my fiance came along and told her that her bride dress looked amazing for a cheap costume. Oh my God. She left crying, and my mother and my father told me that I was being childish. And I could have told Heather myself and not have tasked my father. I think the truth is that her mom is obviously picking her own daughter's side in the situation. I mean, she's biased. Dad just doesn't want to be the one to be blamed here for the whole situation. So he's putting it on his other daughter. And truthfully, I'm not mad at the author. I think showing up to an engagement party or a wedding in a wedding dress is disrespectful. Like, to the people who are having their special moment. It is designed to take attention away from the people that we're supposed to be celebrating. So I don't know. I think that, you know, maybe she could have had like a direct conversation with her half-sister. Would she have listened and said, you know what, I probably shouldn't be wearing a wedding dress to an engagement party? Maybe. But I don't know. I think that was a bit of a taste of humble pie. I don't think it was a bad thing. And in fact, she kind of turned the whole engagement party into a costume party, which was fun. And I think it was just a fun, light way of just saying, hey, this is my day and this is my time to celebrate with my fiance. And we're all here just having fun and being goofy and silly. And if you want it to be about you, then I'm sorry, but not the right day to do it. Here's my humble opinion. I think the author handled the situation beautifully. She protected her day, her engagement party with her fiance, and didn't turn this whole situation into a big public fight. She didn't give her half-sister the drama that she wanted. And in turn, her sister stormed out and created this big exit because that's what she wanted. She wanted the attention because there's an underlying issue. And I think it's because they're all trying to go after their father's attention. Like, which family is gonna win? Which family is loved and favored? There's a deeper issue here that is not being addressed, not being talked about, and everyone is like acting out. Like, there's something deeper going on here, because if someone is making your milestones about themselves and orchestrating situations to be able to create drama around it, that's a pattern. And that needs to be addressed. So she needs to keep a mental check with her half-sister. And she definitely outplayed her half-sister in this situation here. But that's just the first step. She can't keep chasing and figuring out like how to like offset these different situations. And she really does need to have a conversation with, you know, getting everyone at the table and really getting deep and figuring this out. Because it's clearly a manifestation of something much bigger. The author here has to have a solid heart-to-heart conversation with her half-sister, really gauge to figure out where she's at. And if she's willing to kind of just call a truce and move forward together, or if she's like, nope, and it's still going to create that friction, then she knows exactly what's going to continue to happen. So when you do that and you communicate clearly and you figure out where people are at, that is magic. That gives you data, that gives you the intel to figure out where someone is and how much access you want to give them to your biggest moments in your life. So I know you're taking the comments. Did the author in the first story go too far by exposing the affair? And what do you think about story two? And in the last story, was changing the party theme last minute iconic, or was it just like the perfect level of petty? Let me know in the comments. Make sure to like, subscribe for more, and I'll see you in the next one.